Hello, and welcome to From the Rookery Inn. After 8 days of the season, my name is John. With me this evening is Jason.
Good evening.
And Michael.
Watch a cock.
All right. Well, we want to look back on this first week of games, the home win against QPR, 4-0. We drew away at Stevenage. I'm gonna stick with that one. If that's what I was betting, that's what I would have won. And then, of course, the weekend, the 0-0 draw at home to Plymouth Argyle on Saturday. It's Monday night when we record From the Rookery Inn this year. And, of course, From the Rookery Inn is out on a Tuesday morning, ready for your ears. Mike, how are you feeling after leaving Vicarage Road on Saturday? 0-0. That's not exactly necessarily really get a smile out of Mike Parkin.
The exact opposite. Beaming from ear to ear as I skipped out of Vicarage Road, which doesn't happen very often, let alone after a 0-0 draw. But I thought it was certainly one of the most entertaining 0-0 draws that I've ever seen. And I think contextualising it against the last couple of years of Watford football, it was felt good. I think I've been taken to task about this online, about saying that it was a good performance and I enjoyed it and I'm happy about it. And people saying, well, a couple of people said, well, we've drawn home to Plymouth. And if you look at where we were, that isn't really cause for celebration. And I think that's a fair point. I think that is the overarching context of everything that we're seeing, is that we shouldn't probably really be in this situation. We've spoken it about a little bit over the last couple of weeks. Watford shouldn't have been relegated from the Premier League when they did. That was down to the owners and their decision making. There's no hiding from that. There's no buttering it up. There's no sweetening it. Watford have found themselves in a situation that they shouldn't really be in. You could call it mismanagement, you call it whatever, bit of bad luck. But we've gone from the Premier League to the bargain basement in the Championship really quickly. And just the fact that we're getting used to it quickly as supporters is one thing. But that doesn't mean we don't recognise that it's happened. And that the overarching thing is that we've had a quick and pretty sudden fall from grace. So I think that is taken as read. But considering where we are, the fact that we've worked out pretty quickly that in terms of transfers, we're not going to be getting a massive amounts in. We're not going to be spending loads of money compared to the way we were playing last year, the year before that. So far this season, it's been really, really good fun. And for me, I'm old and grey and fat and lazy and wobbly now. All I want is for it to be fun. Mm. And Saturday was a fun, entertaining Championship game. It isn't the prism to look through it for a Watford podcast, obviously. But I think if you're a neutral turned up at that game, you'd have come away going, yeah, that's good value from a 25, 30 quid. And I think there's something to be said for that.
Can I say, I don't like it when people pull you up on how you feel about a good game is. Like, it's almost like you're looking at, like you said, if you look at the time frame of from the last 2 years or even just since last season, yeah, if we're judging it purely on where we are, what we are, who we are, that was an amazing game. It's a great fun game. Then if you do it over 2 years, 5 years, it's different. If you're over 100 years, it's the most amazing game in the world. Look where we are. You know, that's why it annoys me how people sort of judge other people on just how, without knowing or putting a little hashtag, just 2 years reference, whatever it is.
I think it is a fair point, though. I think it is worth saying that I don't think we should have ever been relegated that season. And
which one?
When we went down the first time. Because that's when the problem started. I think even going down to the last game of the season, we probably should have won that game against Arsenal and should have stayed up. And who's to say whether we'd still be in the Premier League? But so I think there is a definite, I do understand where people are coming from to sort of scratching their head saying, how can people be happy with a 0-0 at home to newly promoted Plymouth? I do get that. But I think everyone's on board with that. Everyone's the same. That doesn't mean you can't go to the football and enjoy it. Whether, you know, I'm going to go and watch Chesham United and I will enjoy that, hopefully, as much as I will Watford or England, the Lionesses in the World Cup. It's all, you've got to enjoy your football. And all too often at Vicarage Road, we've been doing the exact opposite. It's felt like a chore. We've been going out of muscle memory. We've been going because it's felt like that's what we do. And it just hasn't been fun. So far this season, it's been fun. And I think Saturday was the sort of epitomised it perfectly.
As a barometer, when the final whistle went, there were a few boos. Not many, just a few in the Rookery End. Last season, there'd have been a lot more because it would have come from, like I said, a performance where we wouldn't have looked like we knew what we were doing. we'd have probably been up against a cosh a bit more. We probably wouldn't have created the chances that we did on Saturday. And I think a part of me went, it's the second game of the season. I know Plymouth are newly promoted, but they won the league with over 100 points in a league where two other teams got over 100 points, if I'm right, in two potentially bigger teams in Ipswich and Sheffield Wednesday that have come up with them. Plymouth are going to do well this year, I think. Having said that, I said QPR are going to be rubbish and they won at Cardiff on Saturday. But again, that point comes to... It's hard to judge whether Saturday was a good result or not. We said the previous week that let's not take too much into smashing QPR 4-0 because they were poor and we think they're going to be rubbish this season. And then, yeah, they go and win at Cardiff. It really is sort of tough. But that barometer, that sort of listening out at the final whistle and hearing, okay, some people aren't happy with that, but I think there are a lot more satisfied people knowing the bigger picture, where we've come from, what we're seeing on the pitch, knowing what we need to then improve that before the end of August. I think generally, yeah, it seemed that people were happy.
We ought to do that as the season goes on, the Bailey Boo Barometer. That's a good way of assessing where we're at.
But we're going to look back over the last 8 days of Watford season, and what have we learnt about the team, the manager, the everything that's gone from it. And we've got five things we think that we've learned in that time. First one, and I just really want to be clear on this to everybody listening. Everybody listen. This came from Mike. Okay? This was Mike's. Number one, if it carries on this way, this team will be easy to fall in love with again. As I say, that was Mike's fall in love.
Yeah.
Again. We have, as we keep saying, two seasons absolute dross. Where are we going to find this fun, though, Mike? What is the thing that we're starting to be fun? I know you're not going to be drawn on that quite yet, but where do you think the fun is going to come from?
From a team that is committed to being a team and performing for us. Playing for the badge, playing for the manager, playing for each other. That's what the whole thing is all about. You want to get behind a team. You want to be able to support a team. You want to be proud of them. But to be able to do that, you have to see what they're trying to achieve. You have to kind of understand what they've been working on and see them trying to execute it. And so far this season, to varying degrees, we've seen that. So QPR, they thought they did really well. QPR stood off them and allowed them to do it. It was the perfect start to the season. But they did what they had to do. Stevenage in midweek, I was there at the Lamex Stadium, brought all the way. And that was a very different challenge, but they stood up to it in different ways. They scored early again, which is good. And yes, we thought we'd go on and win the game comfortably and didn't. But what they actually did was stood up to you know what you're going to get from Stevenage. They got really stuck into them. It's not a cup final for them, but it was a much, much bigger game for them. I do wonder whether, you know, Valerian Ismail put the same side out, and that's a risk because it's a relatively thin squad. So he will have put the same squad out knowing that there's a risk of injury. So perhaps there was a sort of tacit agreement as to, you know, don't maybe go 100%. But what they almost did was won the game late on. There was a vacuum bio chance early on and bookending the 90 minutes with the early goal and the late chance. Could have easily won that. And then the Plymouth game, watching it back on the highlights, you kind of forget how many good chances Watford had. Yes, they didn't sting the palms of the goalkeeper with every single effort, but they were good, well-worked opportunities, people doing the right things. There was movement, there was dedication, there was everything that you'd want to see from your team. Very reductive, but just movement, buzzing around, getting into dangerous areas, asking questions of the opposition, which we just haven't seen before. And you could see how they're planning to do it. It's not hit and hope. It's using the players to the best of their ability, and it's gonna take a while to come together. We didn't beat Plymouth, and we should have done, but it's fun watching it evolve. It's like, I guess it's almost like watching a baby go through infant school, then up through GCSEs, then A levels, and university or whatever. It's like that. We're watching it evolve in real time. We can see what's trying to be achieved with players who are definitely more limited than we've had previously in the last sort of 6-7 years. But they're wholehearted and they're going to make mistakes. But that, for me, kind of makes them more lovable because they're making those mistakes for the right reasons. They're trying. They're trying to execute something. They're trying to get out there and do it, knowing that they're going to potentially fail on occasion. but doing it anyway. And I just feel like we're, it feels like we're on a journey again.
Yeah, and I agree that that feeling of, you know, seeing what they're trying to do, seeing a plan in front of you, where the last few years, it never felt like there was a plan going on. And we saw moments of niceness from João Pedro and some other individuals, but actually we never really knew what the plan was. And when you see, if you think you can see what the plan is, and you see it growing a little bit, it, I think, where Jason talked about some boos, that, those boos, those people with those slightly narrower time frame they're using of, this is one game, it's Plymouth Argyle, were actually the lesser boos are those who are appreciating, look, I can see where it's going and how it's going on. Jason, if you had to give yourself a fun rating out of 10 at the moment, how fun are you feeling for this Watford side?
Perhaps a 7 at this moment in time. Yeah, I think it is fun, isn't it? I like the way we are. Like you say, we are attacking with intent. We're getting behind teams as well. I said to DCW, sitting in front of me on Saturday, I said that sometimes there's been the odd sort of young head decision being made, the wrong cross, a pass is on, maybe they try and beat the man again, a shot from a long way out when there are good passing options available. But you can see they get into that stage where they're having those opportunities to put a final ball in, to have a shot. Because the football, when we get it right, it looks really good. It's nice football to watch. And like I say, just getting in behind the defenders sort of time and time again and forcing the opposition to sort of drop deep and go on the back foot. And back to the game on Saturday, I think the Plymouth defence did really well. We create an inordinate number of set pieces, it seems, from both games that I've seen, the home game so far. And Plymouth on Saturday, I thought, defended them really well. They're sort of guys at the back getting on the end of everything pretty much, and we need to be better at that. But it's the fact that, yeah, we are making the opposition work hard to defend their goal, whereas, again, last year you didn't get that feeling.
No, you certainly did not. Mike, your score out of 10?
My score out of 10... Look,
it'll be lower than Jason's, let's be clear.
I don't know, because I was really full of trepidation coming into this season. I'd had enough, and when we spoke at our first podcast at the Mad Squirrel, I said I'd prefer cricket. And I kind of meant it. I didn't really feel ready. I was so sort of, traumatised, I haven't been in a car crash, but I was just worried about how it was going to pan out, and it's exceeded my expectations. I think we saw on our live show, didn't we, that people weren't sure about Valerian Ismail. Yeah. We thought it was going to be long, hit the target man, and that hasn't been the case at all, has it? So we're only three games in. We've seen a sort of week's worth of Watford football, but it's exceeded my expectations, and I've enjoyed it. I really have enjoyed it, and I think I'm at least at Jason's level of a 7. I think the fact that I had such low expectations. I mean, look, I look forward to hearing this back in two or three months. It's probably going to be 2 or 3 weeks when we've lost 4 on the bounce or whatever.
I'm looking forward to using the baby analogy where we said it was walking within 3 months but failed its GCSEs.
But look, I'm at least at a 7 with Jace. Maybe even 7.5.
Okay, let's not go crazy. It's only second podcast of the season. The other one, that's the first thing we learnt, was about actually it could be quite easy to fall in love. Second thing was the kids are all right, Mike. We've seen sort of two camps of kids get involved. Damn those pesky kids. The first one is Morris and Andrews and doing their thing, who we saw last year. Morris, we've seen, you know, over a while. But also we've seen Martins and Espria.
Yeah.
Let's start with the local lads. You know, they look like proper footballers. In fact, I saw a memory came up in my Facebook today. 13 years ago, we had a page, you had a column. Let's call it a column, a page in the programme. We wrote about something every other week. And that one, the first one we ever had, was like 13 years ago. And you called it, you won't win anything with kids. Because that was such a big thing when we first started the podcast. Like, all the academy graduates are so important. But those boys are, I feel, maybe it's just bad memories, there are a few, that they are further down the line, I think, for boys their age, me calling them boys shows my age, compared to what they were with Lee Hodgson and Adam Thompson.
Yeah, I thought you were going to say we had a memory come up from 13 years ago. James Morris was born, or something like something like that. But I think we've been. I think it goes back to what we were saying earlier about wanting to love and believe in the team, and we've been kind of desperate for a bit of for a one of our own, but a proper one of our own, someone that actually looks like they're going to make it in the game and looks like they're going to contribute on a regular basis for the team. And I'll be honest, I wasn't sure about James Morris last year. I wasn't sure about most of the 11 in fairness. But he was the one that caught my eye initially under Valerian Ismail. The way he strides about the pitch, looking like he knows exactly where he's going, looks empowered to move around. He's obviously been told that you're going to be out of shape sometime. Don't worry about that. Do your best, but stick to the plan. And he looks a foot taller. He looks solid. He looks confident. He looks brave. And he looks every bit the Championship footballer. Hopefully one day he'll be a Premier League footballer. But at the moment, we need him to be a Championship footballer. And he is absolutely that. He looks like an integral part of this Watford side. I thought the same for Ryan Andrews on Saturday. I thought his composure when he's going forward, he's comfortable on the ball, he's beating men, as Jace was saying there. We're getting into situations where we're looking to get balls in. They're not getting it right the whole time, absolutely, absolutely not, but that will come. But they're getting there, and they're getting into positions already more frequently than supposedly much better and more experienced players did last year. And I think Morris and Andrews are kind of the heroes for me. I know we're only a week in, but so far, I think they've made an exceptionally good start to the season. They just look so at ease. They look empowered. They look confident and comfortable and threatening. I think they've been great.
The lads from South America, Jason, Martins, you know, I said on last week's podcast, he was running, he was energised in a you know, different way, I suppose, to Morris and Andrews. But this week we got to see a bit more of Asprilla. That was, I mean, his ball through for that chance was, I mean, I think I mentioned it again at the live event, that ball he put through for at Norwich away, just, I don't know if he needs a nickname of the Taylor, because, you know, he's threading it through perfectly. But him and Martins are doing that, what you might always put down there, that's the fun, exciting thing, that sort of football.
Mike talks about the fact that Morris and Andrews look empowered to do what they've been asked to do, and you can say the same for the attacking guys, including the two youngsters in Martins and Asprilla. Martins sort of picking up the ball, carrying, driving the ball, that's exactly what you want. And particularly at home, and if you're on top, teams are going to sit back and defend more. So you need these players that are going to drive, get towards the box, then make it difficult for the defender to make a challenge. And he was sort of doing that time and time again. I would have to say there were a couple of times where I thought he might have passed the ball and he carried on. But again, you sort of perhaps you allow for a bit of that. Again, he's sort of talking about young heads making the wrong decisions. And that will happen. That will happen regardless of how you ask them to play. But the fact that he's trying to make something happen, you've got to be pleased with that. And when he came off, he was naturally disappointed. I think it's probably a good thing to see. It probably wasn't bio levels of stroppiness, bio against Blackpool levels of stroppiness. But he was quite rightly upset because he'd sort of been having a decent game and probably felt he could make something happen. And then a few people were sort of puzzled and thought, okay, why are you taking him off? He looks our biggest threat. But I didn't think we really lost anything in terms of Asprilla coming on, because again, he caused problems. And again, as well as that, sort of being able to do the same sort of run at players, take players on, we know he's got a lot of skills in his locker, but the passing as well. The passing from Asprilla is we know what he can do. And like you say, that through ball to Bio.
The Taylor, Mike, he's the Taylor, threading the ball through.
There was a moment when he wriggled clear of two defenders were on him, and he sort of turned them both inside out and got free. And it was just such a joy to see Asprilla set free, really. And it feels like he's set loose. And I think both him and Martins will benefit from being looked at as senior providers of a little bit of that skill and flair. They know that there will be stuff expected of them. Martins has grasp the metal really well. And I agree with Jason on Saturday. He did try to do too much when we've had these willing runners left and right throughout, coming from all over. There's never been a shortage of options. Certainly on Saturday, we were getting into space, and if he'd have looked up a couple of times, we could have created even more chances that we would have missed. So he definitely needs to learn that. But he's one that is. It started disappointingly last year. He didn't really get a look in for whatever reason, whether they didn't fancy him in training or whatever. And Asprey was brought on as a sort of, almost a throw of the dice, used as a throw of the dice, really, wasn't it? I don't think anything was...
He was definitely used because of all the injuries when he started games.
Whereas now, those two, there is stuff expected of them. And with Loser in there as well, there are people who can do serious damage from distance, for picking passes with skills to take them away from players, and to go back to the fun thing, lift the crowd, give us some entertainment, give us something to talk about. You know, that moment from Asprey where he turned, it might have even been three defenders around him. It was breathtaking. It was magical. It's like, yes, what a player that is. And it's exciting, and it's obviously by no means the finished article, but we have still got players at the football club who can do exciting stuff, and yeah, can't wait to see how those guys develop, along with James Morris and Ryan Andrews. It's exciting.
Back to the Brazilians, South Americans. I mentioned about sort of, yeah, you taking one off, bringing the other one on. Martin's looking disappointed. Asprey not had a start this season. I think I like that as well, because that they're not guaranteed a place in the side. Martin's being taken off after an hour or whatever, perhaps tells him, okay, you're good, but you're not going to play the full 90 if I don't think
we're not after just the next Joao Pedro, who we're all going to depend upon.
Exactly. This is a team. If you're not going to play the team game, if you're not going to make the passes, then we're going to get someone on who can, and Asprey is equally capable of performing that role. So just to give them that little bit of extra fire, that extra sort of push to say, right, if you want to play a full 90, if you want to start every week, you need to show me that you deserve to be in the team.
This isn't one of our five things, but I do want to mention it. That was a part of a quadruple substitution. Yeah. And you know, you can raise questions about whether that's sensible. I know Dave in the group wasn't that impressed, felt it changed the dynamic a little bit too much. But what I do like about that is that was pretty much on the hour mark, I think. And that's Valerian Ismail showing he's not going to be scared to try and change the game, to try and have an impact on it. I think he looks like he's going to be quite bold and quite brave in that respect. So, again, early days, but I like the fact that he's taken the bull by the horns. He could tell that Plymouth were doing a decent job at keeping us out. And ultimately, we did run out of steam against them. We did end up, for the first time, Dan Backman, and I know we're going to come and talk about this in a minute, we were sending the ball long. It ironically did create a chance from it, from just hoofing it over the halfway line. But yeah, I like that. I like that from the boss, that he was willing to take off some key names, and he knew it's a gamble. Changing four players is massive, but he went for it anyway. It didn't come off, but we've been critical in the past of managers who haven't been able to change games. Yeah. He went for it. Didn't come off this time, but if he stays brave, I'm all for it.
Not only did it was surprising to the fans, it was definitely surprising to the social media team at Watford, who clearly had never thought there'd be four substitutes at once, and they had to do it on two slides. Surprise, surprise for everybody.
I think, to be fair, I think it was only intended to be three, and then it looked like Sir Elta was talking to Ismail, wasn't he? It looked like he might have picked up a knock or something, because then Livermore got called back when the other three subs were waiting to, or almost ready to come on. So I'm wondering if it was going to be a three turned into a four because of Sir Elta.
Well, that completely negates my point, then. I'll take it all back.
Even so, he didn't sort of withdraw one of the others and say, no, we're just going to do three. And three in one go on the hour mark is probably not something you see that often from a team that is dominating the game as we were.
Number three on the five things that we've learnt this season is there will be blood, / there will be mistakes.
Yeah.
Now, Mike, it's... Well, we've got to be patient, haven't we, with this?
This is my biggest thing at the moment. I think, yeah, we do have to be patient. I was at Stevenage on Tuesday, and obviously the game wasn't going the way we wanted it to. Stevenage gummed it up. They got stuck into us, and we weren't able to come up with an answer as well as we were against Plymouth. The sort of levels just didn't seem to be there. And naturally, the frustration is... I think Ben Hamer struggled. with his distribution on Tuesday. As you'd expect, hasn't played much football. As we saw away against Coventry, he doesn't really know where the goal is, as he just sort of ushered one in. So we were asking a lot of Ben Hamer against a physical, high-intensity side in Stevenage. And it wasn't really clicking, if we're honest, on Tuesday. A few bits and bobs just weren't going right. But you could sense it in the crowd. Just send it is the basic premise of it. Just send it. Get it long. Get rid of it. And I get that. And it was the same on Saturday. Get rid of it. Send it long. Make sure they don't score. I understand that because no one wants to see Watford concede. And no one wants to see Watford concede when it's avoidable. So Ben Hamer's distribution on Tuesday was iffy, as was Dan Backman's on Saturday. I actually thought he had less hasty, poor deliveries than he did against QPR. Perhaps more concerningly, he had time with a couple and still managed to pick out a white shirt, which is bothersome. That's not good at all. However, it's risk and reward. And we've seen in every game so far this season, a pass from the back, they've committed, one pass unlocks it, everything. It's the keys to the kingdom if done correctly. There's a reason that a lot of the top clubs in world football play this way. And you could argue a lot of the top clubs in world football have slightly different personnel at their disposal. And that is of course absolutely fair. But we've already seen the rewards. We've also seen the risk. We haven't let one in yet, but it is definitely, definitely going to happen. We're the only team, bizarre, amazingly, not to have conceded in the Championship in the league after two games, two clean sheets. So anyone critical of Dan Backman might be aware of that. But we've all seen what's happened. We've all seen that the distribution has been either under pressure worrying or not under pressure worrying. But that's because I dare say he's never been asked to do this before in his career, nor has Ben Hamer on Tuesday. So he is in effect learning on the job. And that's not to say he's not a good keeper. I think as a shot stopper, he's up there with the best that I've seen at Watford. He's made some tremendous saves. We saw it on Saturday against Plymouth. They could have nicked it, and he made a really, really good save. It was sort of Schmeichel-esque with his sort of arms spread and that sort of thing. But it's going to happen. There will be days when we lose the game because we've made a mistake. But again, it goes back to what we were saying at the start. The reason this is fun and enjoyable again is because we can see what they're trying to do. And trying is the key word there. They're not getting it right at the moment every single time. And they probably won't, because this is Watford with a thin squad in the Championship, duking it out in the Championship. But I would urge patience, and I get it. It's almost instinctive. You see a man bearing down, and it's like, get rid of it, get it out. That's just how you feel. Do not let them score. Do not let them get the ball. Get rid of it. But take a look at the bigger picture. Look what's being worked on, and cut them some slack. Really,
there's gonna be a bloke near me. They'll turn around, going, "Told you so. Told you so." The minute. Something like that does happen, but he said it's risk and reward, and
that, yeah. Because we've told him so. It will happen.
Yeah. To just know it will.
Yeah. I mean, DCW made a good point against talking to him on Saturday, that after the first or second or third, or after one of the times that Batman gave the ball away, not long after, we've done it again, and five passes later, Andrews is behind the defence and we're creating a chance. Exactly for that. He creates. I think it's, his passing ability, his distribution ability is not, like you say, we've not got world-class keeper that can do that because we're playing Championship football. Sometimes, again, back to the decision-making, that felt a bit off at times, where you can see Porteous, he's got a simple pass to Porteous, he's giving it to Hoot under pressure. You think, why not go that way? Is that a lack of confidence because he's already given the ball away once? He's trying to play it. Yeah, he's like, he's not feeling comfortable at switching feet and then getting the pass away. He's feeling hurried and he's doing that, but still trying to play to the game plan. You got to hope that over time it will become better, if it's something that can be coached into him to be able to improve time will tell. But yeah, like you say, you can. It is worrying, but you understand why we're doing it.
Number four on the five things that we've learned this week so far. We need a number nine. We know there's a gap, but also the fact that we did have, or the club held one of their fans forums at our places, and Scott Duxbury said that, you know, they are in a search for this number nine striker, probably a slightly more bigger, stronger sort of a player to add into the mix. Do you think that was the biggest problem on Saturday, Mike? You know, we did a lot. We didn't score any. It was all there. If we had a better number nine, is it the last piece of the jigsaw puzzle?
I was going to say it's the elephant in the room, but it's more the crow on top of the rookery, isn't it? that we need to address. And in fairness to Vacuum Bio, I think he's started the season well. What I like about him is that he doesn't hide. He puts himself about a little bit. I think he needs to be more physical. He's not, Jace mentioned earlier, the amount of set pieces we're creating. I'm not sure we're seeing enough from him when the ball's coming into the box. I think the biggest impact he had on Saturday was a foul on the keeper in the second half. But I think we all know that the problem with Vacuum Bio is the issues around his signing, the amount of money he cost, where he came from, and the people involved in it. That leaves a sour taste in the mouth. If he'd come in for 50 grand or 100 grand or maybe even a million, then I think there would have been a lot more willingness to cut him a little bit of slack. It's absolutely not his fault, but I think it's more about what that transfer represents that gives people a little bit of sticks in the craw a little bit. And then,
but also the fact that he came last summer and he went last January, and shipped off is exactly the right word to say. He wasn't treated quite as well as he should have done. He wasn't in a great place, as in the situation that he found himself in at Watford. It wasn't good last year. But is it the most important piece?
Yeah, it is. Because, look, what Vacuum Bio will do, if he gets the ball in the six-yard box, he'll probably get it on target or he'll score. Mm. I thought he did really well early on. There was that smart volley that he had to sort of adjust his body to connect with, and it flashed wide. That was a really good effort. And then we saw, towards the end, all he had to do really was take a touch, bit of composure, and slot it. By no means an easy chance, but a decent championship level striker would be looking to score with that late opportunity, and the one at Stevenage as well. It was a good save from the keeper, and you could argue that perhaps he was too close. But again, you're thinking a striker at the top of his game is sticking that one away, and he's got four in three instead of two in three, and Watford have got 6 points and are in the next round of the cup. So that answers your question. Is it the last piece of the jigsaw? I think it absolutely is. And they just need... I'm prepared to eat a little bit of humble pie regarding him, because I like the cut of his jib. I like he fits in with everyone else. He's given it everything he's got. That doesn't necessarily mean he's good enough. I'd love to be proved wrong, but I suspect what will have happened on Sunday morning, Monday morning, is Valerian Ismail would have taken a tape of the game, just popped it on Giaretta, Manga, Duxbury, Gino's desk, whichever one of them is in charge, and just gone, that was 0-0 for a reason. Sort it out, lads. There's no denying it. Shaq Ford's gone out on loan today to Orient, so that leaves us with Reece Healy, who came on Tuesday against Stevenage and looked pretty ineffective. I mean, very, very difficult circumstances. But I don't personally see how he fits into this side. He is not a number nine in the truest sense of the word. He's not going to lead. He's much more diminutive, feeding off another of a striker. He looks like he has to play in a pair for me from the very, very limited sightings we've had of him. So, yeah, it is a glaring hole in the side. And the problem for Watford is, it's the same for everyone. Everyone wants a goal scorer from Tottenham all the way down. You know, Bayern Munich only got their man a couple of days ago. One of the biggest teams in Europe, in the world, only got their man a couple of days ago. So everyone's scrabbling around. There is a relatively small pool of players available to us. Adam was reporting that there was another chap from Charleroi on the horizon, which is frustrating. It feels like just when we're getting back into loving the team again, there's that familiar link which sort of tends to drag you down a little bit. But ultimately we need someone, and we need someone better than who we've got. We've got Vacuum Bio, we've got Reece Healy, and we've got Toby, And I just don't think Toby's ready for Championship football. So we've got two strikers, one of whom hasn't had a minute of league football yet, and the other who's missed some decent opportunities. So it's absolutely paramount.
Yeah. We'd have got Tom Ince to come in, but again, he's not a number nine, and he's not playing those roles. Is it, though, a big fella that we need, or is it someone who can be nice and quick and small and but not have to depend on a big man next to him, Jason?
Can we get both?
I don't think we can. I don't think the money's going to stretch that far, Jason. We have a mic sofa. Let's see what we can find behind in the cushions. No, there's not enough.
But that's the problem, isn't it? We do need that kind of that all-round player. And we've seen, I think, Bio's done okay in terms of when he's got his back to goal. There's been a couple of dodgy first touches. But generally, I think he's shown some good play where he's been able to get on the ball and distribute it quite quickly to the players that are finding space out wide, and then he's sort of turning and getting into the box. And he does that quite well as well in terms of instinct, I think. And he's, I think, as we said, he's sort of been getting into these positions to get the chances. I feel like I'm winding the clock back a few years and talking about Andre Gray.
Okay.
Because that was the same. Get good at getting into the positions, not then being able to apply himself once he's there. Talks about the attitude as well. I think his attitude has changed remarkably from what we can see compared to where he was last year. I've already mentioned, was it the Blackpool game, wasn't it, where he subbed off in a sulk. Completely changed, it seems, this year. But, yeah, we need someone, like we say, someone who can do that role with the back to goal and take the balls that come through from midfield to then recycle and back out to the guys that are finding space out wide, turning, and then either instinct, getting on the end of crosses from close range, because again, we're getting a lot of crosses into the box. Is that running onto the ball, slotting in with your foot? Is it coming in with a header because the ball's coming in high? So again, strengths there. And it is running onto those through balls from a Spreer or a loser ball, or maybe even a Wesley Hood ball from the back, running on and sort of with those one-on-one situations. Because we're seeing those, not just Bayo, we're seeing other players getting those as well. Ryan Andrews has had a few of those with his runs. Dele Bashir had that one in against QPR. So we are creating those one-on-one chances. And you'd think when we're playing away from home, we might get more of those because teams will be playing a higher line. So we need someone that, if they are going to break the line, to finish that as well. So you do kind of want someone that is capable of doing it. But like I say, it's so, so hard to find the player that will do that. People, you trot out the phrase, we need a 20-goal-a-season striker.
Yeah.
If you've got a 20-goal-a-season striker, you're not selling it.
Yeah.
If you are, it's because you need the money, and maybe it's a team at a lower level that League One, League Two will still cost a lot of money, still unproven at this level. Or it's the dregs that people don't want because they're not playing maybe at a higher level, maybe in the Championship, depending on what funds you've got. Players in this division, strikers in this division, now go for a lot of money that clubs in the Championship have not got. Gone are the days, probably, of signing a Troy Deeney for 250 grand or whatever it was from Walsall. Even then, that was a punt, and that would be a punt these days, but it wouldn't be 250 grand. It would be a lot more.
Yeah, and the longer this goes on, and I think one of the targets has popped off to Birmingham, and with their new investment, it feels like we're sort of getting to that point now where we're waiting for the loanee market. The question is, are we going to get a loanee, which probably is quite expensive, I thought it was Davis we had last year, or is it more like a loanee in a Tom Cleverley sort of age where they're really raw? But do you remember that season XYZ had at Watford? That might be the way we're going down, but it is, how long have we got left? We've got a week, 2 weeks almost of the transfer window. And it is the bit of business that they need to get sorted, and we'll see what they do. Finally, Michael, and this is the thing, is really down to Big Val. It is the fact that the other of the five things that we've learnt so far this season, firstly, it's going to be easy to fall in love with them. The kids are all right. There's going to be some blood, and we need number nine. Number five was attitude, and application is everything. And it really does seem to have started from Valerian, and whatever it is he's done to get more out of these players.
I saw him, I think it was a QPR game, but he looked frustrated that a substitute wasn't ready. So he got the ball, came out, he held on to it, evidently wanting to make the substitution, wanting the change to happen. and one of them wasn't ready. It might have been Chuck Fitadze, actually, which is quite like about that bit of sort of renegade, isn't he? Sort of he'll do it on his own terms. I thought he had another good game against Plymouth. Didn't quite have the impact. He wasn't allowed the free rein that he was against QPR. But he's evidently in the man in charge. And I don't think that has been evident for the last couple of years. The managers have felt on borrowed time since the minute they came in. And that hasn't been the case with Valerian Ismail. We heard at the start of the summer he wants 7 weeks with the squad. He wants a full he wants to drill them, he wants time with them. And you kind of take that with a pinch of salt, because that's exactly what anyone's going to say. But what we've talked about this evening is that you've seen the fruits of that labour. We've seen a new style of playing. But perhaps even more rewarding than that, and Jason's alluded to it a couple of times, a new attitude. Just the commitment. You know, Vakun Bayo is sloped off, like Jay said a minute ago. Backman, a couple of times, has looked like he's going to get involved, but has sort of taken a step back, and I saw him stop a couple of the other players get involved on Saturday. You just see it all filtering through, and I like the fact that Ismail made the point that the 11 that started against QPR were all there last season, and I think he was making a point there that is an absolute valid one. If you're playing shoulder to shoulder for the boss, for each other, for the club, then a lot can be achieved. Look at the teams that finished above Watford last season. Certainly didn't have the roster that we did, but had a lot more belief, discipline and commitment. And you can see how far it got clubs. We came unstuck against teams who were demonstrably nowhere near as good as us in terms of talent, but were just prepared to put it on the line, to get stuck in, to do what they were told, to work for each other. And it's... I think these two put the bookends that we've come up with, 1 and 5, the sort of falling in love with the team and the attitude and application, kind of encompass the whole thing, because it goes back round. If it looks like they care and looks like they're doing ultimately what they're told, they're trained athletes who have to stick to a plan. They're not 4-year-old kids, so they're not doing as they're told in that regard. But sticking to the plan, sticking what they've worked at, it means a lot. And they just look different. They look like they've got purpose. They look like they've got determination. They look like if someone treads on their toes at a corner, they're not going to lose it, which they would have done last year. They would have started sulking away at Millwall. Oh, he kicked me in the shin. Get on with it. Get your head down. Stick to the plan and deliver. And again, we are a week in. We've played 2 league matches and a cup game, which ultimately we went out. But the signs in terms of the body language, and it all looks better. You know, Ryan Porteous, for example, the effort to get back and get his body the right side of the ball after, you know, 88 minutes on Saturday. He is not the world's best defender, we know that. But he's working hard to do what he is supposed to do. And we just haven't seen that. Far too often, we've had too many players coasting too many times. And they look more of a unit. So the attitude looks better, the application looks better, and lo and behold, the results are starting to look better as well.
There's a couple of things that sort of stood out to me, just sort of snips from articles that I've seen. One, Jake Livermore spoke about Ismail and how he's respected him as a head coach / manager. Just the fact that he's wanted to come back and work with him again, I think, says a lot. That's always a good sign. But then also on the other side of that is the balance of it all. And we saw the presser where he's talking about players turning up late for training on day one. And even today, there was apparently in his press conference, he was asked if they would say to Bayo, don't worry about it for the chance that you missed. No, you don't. Number 9's paid to score goals. So we don't say, don't worry about it. They're not going to be mollycoddled. It's not a case of what a great boss he is, you know. It's the discipline still appears to be there, just from what we're seeing from the outside that's being reported in the press.
The other Vlad, not the other Vlad, Vlad, who we had, you know, came in, he was meant to be the disciplinarian. This feels so much different. It does feel a little bit like Valerian will give you a cheeky wink and a smile, where Vlad was just cold-faced and non-emotional in any sort of way. It feels like a little bit like that's, he's got a better balance, but also he's in a better place with the squad he's got, where Vlad didn't have that. We had such a mixed bunch and the bunch changed so much. It does feel a little bit more like that is, after, you know, those two appointments, that feels more comfortable, doesn't it, for Mr. Pozzo?
Valerian Ismail feels like a much better fit than Vladimir Ivic ever did. Although, to give him credit, I think Šiško Muñoz probably benefited from a lot of the hard work that he put in. But it just feels correct. The balance feels appropriate. It feels like he's the boss. He's getting his vision out there. And I think Jason's right. The stuff he's obviously supportive of his side. I think he obviously is capable of putting an arm around, like you say, John, the occasional wink and a sort of pat on the perp bottom every now and again to say, well, well done. But he's not going to protect them, because what I think happened last time, they were mollycoddled. They're worried about how Ismail Assar would feel. They're worried about how João Pedro would feel. They're worried about how the other high owners, high ticket operators would react. So they effectively let them do whatever they want. On the pitch, certainly, because that was evident. It was sort of, you look a bit above and it's like sort of, just sort of manic minor, wasn't it? Just running around all over the place. So you have to suspect that it was similar off the pitch as well. Jace is right to point out the little stuff that's coming out in the press is obviously designed to let everyone know rules is rules here now, and they are being adhered to. And I think mentioning people like Jake Livermore, who obviously can't play 90 minutes at the moment, whether we'll get 90 minutes out of him going forward, who knows. But having that little bit of extra gravitas around the training ground again, someone who's not really going to take any nonsense, saw him absolutely thunder into a challenge on Tuesday night. James Morris was sort of taking far too long to get rid of the ball. Livermore was probably about 15 yards away, thought, bugger this, and absolutely steamed in, cleaned it out. He's, whether you like him or not, he's never going to be the most... He's not a flair player, is he? No. But he's been around the block. He's worked with Valerian Ismail, so there's a sort of chemistry there, if you like. But it just feels like a better fit. And we said it at the live podcast a couple of weeks ago. It feels like we're rolling the dice definitely with him, but it feels probably like the best we could have got at this stage. So that mix of experience in the Championship, some good, some bad, the clear, defined way of playing, although it's slightly different to what we expected. He's delivering on the good things that we hoped so far. I've got a caveat here with the fact that we're a week in, so things could go south very, very quickly. A couple of injuries to this Watford squad, and we're having very different conversations. But look, ultimately, from every level, football operations-wise, the issues around the ownership, I think, are still there to be debated. And I think we say it all the time, that, and we said it at the top of the podcast, the fact that we are in this position, in the Championship, having to cut our cloth, is because we ballsed it up. And I say we, ultimately, it's the ownership have ballsed it up. We've gone from FA Cup final, knocking on the door of Europe, to having to wonder where the striker's coming from, wait for everyone else to do their deals until we can get ours. That isn't great. That is poor custodianship of the club. And that conversation is ongoing. But in terms of what we're seeing, turning up at the Vic at 2:30 on a Saturday or 7:00 on a Tuesday night, they're delivering for us in that at the moment. And one other thing, just we talked about the post and pre-match music. There's the We Allies video is still being played as part of that package as well. And I think that's important that message keeps going. There's a tendency sometimes these videos get shown for a couple of games at the end of a season and not again. They're not hiding from that. And there's the Hearts Pride badge on the sleeve throughout August. And I think what that says to me is that Watford aren't just talking the talk, they're walking the walk. They are making sure that they're viewing this whole... Inclusivity isn't an option. It is it's a non-negotiable. And they're trying absolutely everything to make sure that everyone is aware of that. And they won't be cowed by people saying, oh, it's being rammed down our throats, because that is, I'm afraid, palpable nonsense. And I'm afraid... I won't tell people if their opinion is right or wrong, but that one is right. That one is wrong. Inclusivity is non-negotiable, and Watford aren't hiding from that. So I think that they're getting that right. And ultimately, we go to sit on our backsides for an hour and 45 minutes, an hour and 50, or 2.5 hours, depending on who the ref is, to enjoy it, to forget about work, to forget about the stresses and strains of real life and the realities of what's going on in the world around us. We go there to enjoy it with our mates, with our families, with ultimately, they're our heroes, aren't they? They always have been and always will be. Whoever wears the badge, they're our guys and girls, aren't they? And at the moment, after 1 week, they're doing what we want them to do. So let's see if it can continue.
After 2 weeks, Jason, we would have played Stoke. More the same, I don't think, unless this new striker comes in. We just want to keep on that development pathway, really, don't we? Of becoming an even more fun team to watch.
I think so. And obviously, first league away game. So it'll be interesting to see how we play there, whether we adopt the same aggressive attitude in terms of pressing, or do we sit back a bit more? I hope that we do press, you know, do keep on the positive. I think, as we said, that the attitude that we've seen, we've got players that are good enough with the right application to be able to do that. We obviously saw Stoke at the very end of last season and wasn't much going on there. You can never really tell how close to the real Stoke that would have been, given it was a sort of dead rubber and whatever they've done over the summer. But you still think it's a game that we should be competitive in and capable of coming away with a result. And if you can take what we've done so far, and I think it was we talked about having the same 11 or same 10 playing in the League Cup tie. I think obviously Valerian was looking to get that momentum and get the games in the legs of those players. And you would imagine that he'll want to do that again for the next league game and just to keep that momentum going in terms of style and attitude. I suppose the only question is Sierra Alta going to be capable of playing? If he went off with a knock, is he going to be okay? We've already said, can Livermore play 90 minutes? If not, who do you put in there? Do you maybe drop Loser back, put someone else in the middle, maybe a check for Tadze? Let's see. But in terms of the style, I think you want to see the same again.
I think it's been a great opening week for Watford. I think we've had three different challenges and I think they've rose to the challenge in different ways, different aspects. Obviously, loads and loads to work on. Absolutely fascinated to see how we do away from home. I think if Stoke get into us early and Dan Backman starts making mistakes or when the defenders start making mistakes and bad decisions, the Bet365 isn't going to be full, but they can still be a noisy crowd at Stoke. So how are they going to cope with that? Will they feel a little bit more, a bit looser in a good way because it's not the home crowd expecting them to be on the front foot the whole time? Absolutely fascinating to see. This is the next unanswered question. How are we going to look away from home? How are we going to deal with a team who is on the front foot as opposed to perhaps waiting to see what we do? So great challenge. Stoke have had an indifferent start. They looked at like world beaters on the first day, and then got sorted out on the second championship match day, didn't they? But if the fun is going to continue, we need to at least be competitive in these games. Either result wouldn't surprise me. I don't think it's going to be a draw away from home with Watford necessarily. I don't think it's going to be. I don't think we're going to be hanging on very often for draws. I don't think that's going to be the way it'll work. Stoke will have watched the tapes. They will fancy themselves. They will know what to do. They will know how to try and stop us. If we keep doing what we're doing, it's going to be difficult to stop us. But the obvious pressure points, we don't need to mention them again. And they will get at us. And it'll be a massive, massive ask. And I can't. The good thing is, I'm really looking forward to it. We might get thumped 3-0, 4-0. It may well happen. But I think we'll continue to ask questions of the opposition in this division. I think the teams at the top will sort us out. I think the really, really good teams will, if we played them at the moment, they'd sort us out quite comfortably. But Stoke, the jury's out. The jury's out on Watford. Another championship weekend. Bring it on.
Smiling Michael Parkin. Who would have thought? Thank you much, Jason.
Thank you. Just one little point there, Michael. We are one of the teams at the top at the moment.
We just sort ourselves out then, do we? Thank you, Michael.
You're welcome. Cheers.
Thank you much for listening. Remember, we're out, as you may have done already today, to listen to From the Rooker End on a Tuesday morning. So thank you very much for doing so. Do tell your friends. We're back again, of course, next week, once Watford have visited Stoke-on-Trent. Go on, you ones!